Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. Coming up on today's show, we'll hear about a new institute in Boulder that imagines what a post-pandemic world could look like. How can we take advantage of what we're learning in the pandemic and use it to make a better world in the future? Then there has been a lot of discussion about equity in all aspects of society, including access to the outdoors. We'll hear from one young man who experienced firsthand the lack of diversity in climbing. As a result, he set up a non-profit to make the sport of climbing more diverse and more equitable. Then we'll hear from you, the listener, on a brief comment line. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have headlines from the BBC, and then it's time for science. And this morning, we continue our series on COVID-19 and the University of Colorado. That's on How on Earth, our locally produced award-winning science show. At 9 o'clock, it is The Wit and Wisdom of Alan Watts, rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Governor Jared Polis is the subject of another recall election. The Denver Post reports that the Secretary of State's office on Monday gave approval for a petition effort to start gathering signatures. Organisers have until November 13th to collect more than 631,000 valid signatures that would force a special election. A recall election would also include a question asking voters to select a replacement. The Recall Polis 2020 Committee says they're taking this recall step because Governor Polis has abused his powers during the pandemic. They say this includes forcing businesses and houses of worship to close and also mandating the wearing of masks. This is the second time in 2 years that Polis has been targeted by a recall effort. Colorado's Secretary of State announced on Monday that voters in all 64 counties across the state will be able to track the status of their individual mail ballots for the 2020 general election. General Griswold said that voters will be able to receive notifications by phone, email or text about the status of their mail ballots from the time that their county clerk and recorder mails the ballot packet to when their voted ballot is received and accepted for counting. Griswold says this is the first time that all voters in the state will have access to ballot tracking. In previous elections, 12 counties offered the service, and the city of and county of Denver has developed and will continue to operate a separate but similar system. Voters in the remaining 51 counties that are adding ballot tracking will this week receive notification that they have been enrolled in the service if their registration record contains an email address. Those who don't have an auto enrollment notification can sign up at colorado.ballottracks.net, and that's T-R-A-X. Monday's announcement came just days after Secretary of State Griswold filed a lawsuit against the Postal Service, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy and the Denver Postmaster in an effort to stop delivery of flyers to Colorado voters containing what she says is misleading information for voters. The mailer tells voters that they must request a mail-in ballot for the November elections. However, in Colorado, every registered voter already receives a mail ballot without requesting one. The mailer also recommends that voters mail back their ballots at least a week before the November 3rd election day. Griswold argued that the information could make people believe that they must mail their ballot. However, besides mailing ballots, voters in Colorado can also drop them off at drop boxes, vote in person at service centres as well. The Denver Post reports that despite a judge ruling in favour of the Secretary of State on Saturday, the post office has already sent out 75% of the flyers. While no more postcards can be sent out as a result of the judge's ruling, it is estimated that between 1.8 and 2.4 million postcards have already been delivered to voters in Colorado. Aurora City Council last night approved a temporary ban on the use of ketamine by first responders. The use of the powerful sedative has been under scrutiny since Elijah McLean died days after he was injected by first responders in August 2019. The Aurora Sentinel reports that documents have revealed that the paramedic who injected McLean overestimated his weight by nearly 80 pounds. McLean had also been put in a now banned chokehold by police who were responding to a call about a suspicious person. McLean was not suspected of committing a crime, nor had he committed a crime. The temporary ban on ketamine will be in effect until a consultant that's been hired by the City of Aurora submits their report on policies related to McLean's death, and these include an investigation into how ketamine was used. In July, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment launched their own investigation into first responders' use of ketamine on McLean. The Colorado Society of Anesthesiologists has said that first responders should stop injecting people with ketamine until the State Health Department finishes their review. A Denver police officer has filed an ethics complaint against City Councilwoman Candy Sidibaka. The complaint alleges that Sidibaka insulted police officers during a protest action at the removal of a homeless encampment on August 19th. Officer Mallory Lutkin said in her complaint to the Denver Board of Ethics that Sidibaka called the police officer stupid and said those comments were meant to dehumanise and humiliate officers on scene in front of protesters. Lisa Calderon, Sidibaka's chief of staff, told the Denver Post on Monday that the council member had no comment on the complaint, and she said that the office will respond once their legal advisor has had time to review the document. In a previous statement about the incident that was made to Denver 7, council member Sidibaka said that rather than focusing solely on the language that she used to convey her distress as she stood behind police tape while her constituents were abused, she said it would be more productive to focus on those who were assaulted by the Denver Police Department that day. Firefighters in Boulder contained a small wildland fire above Settlers Park west of the city on Monday evening. The Daily Camera reports that the fire grew to 3/4 acre and was 100% contained just after 6 p.m. yesterday. The cause and the origin of the fire are still under investigation. And in the weather today, expect warm temperatures around the Front Range, highs in the upper 80s, getting close to 90 degrees, but hazy conditions around the Front Range as well, poor air quality still remaining. It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. The Highland Institute, based at the Highland City Club in Boulder, would like to envision what a post-pandemic society could look like by imagining the lessons that we're learning right now and how we could implement changes. They are featuring a series of speakers and keynote listeners who can be change makers. I spoke with Douglas Gardner, who's with the Highland Institute.
The Highland City Club, a well-known social and business club in Boulder, has for years been talking about an institute, a think tank. When I came back to Boulder in March of this year, I spoke to the founder, Sina, about the possibility of delving into the post-pandemic world. How do we not slip back into where we were before, but take advantage of what we're learning during the pandemic? There are a lot of good things coming out. In the midst of grieving and suffering and all the negative part, there's also love and empathy and kindness and compassion and heroes and the frontline workers. We're sort of developing mental muscles in that frame. And how do we carry those forward to the post-pandemic era? There also are, I say, cracks in society showing up, the inequalities in housing and income and health. Those are very pronounced. How do we ensure that when we advance into the post-pandemic world, that we can address those inequalities? And so we end up better in the future than we were when we entered this dire period of the virus.
I know you yourself have a particular interest in a post-pandemic future due to your own background, professional career at the United Nations. You know, give people a sense of what you're bringing to the table.
Yeah, I worked for the United Nations Development Program for 30 years. And in developing countries, 133 of them around the globe, I've worked with governments in trying to advance policies and practices. The UN has a global norm called Sustainable Development Goals. So how do we support governments to reach that? Looking now at the United States, and the mess we're in this pandemic, it's an opportunity. I see crisis as the window of opportunity. How can we move forward in this moment of crisis to get our policies and practices better, whether that is with regard to education, health, deepening of democracy, conscious capitalism, a better economy? There are lots of domains and that we're delving into in this new Highland Institute for the Advancement of Humanity.
You described this really as a think tank. And for people who maybe are familiar with the term, but not necessarily fully understand what that is, what's your vision for what a think tank is and what that might look like here in Boulder?
A think tank can do a number of different things. They're well-known ones, the Aspen Institute, Brookings, and others that I've all worked with. And some of them seek to generate knowledge, and others serve as a container to bring knowledge together and then send it out. That's what we're trying to do in the Highland Institute. The think tank may be a little bit grandiose, but just think of it as a container where we bring in wisdom holders, thought leaders, geniuses, and invite them to share their vision and the actions to get there. And then the role of the Institute is to give legs to those ideas, to work with change makers in government, in business, and a principal of a school, so that these ideas can be carried forward. So we're building back better and greener during and after the pandemic.
Well, I suppose to that end, in terms of how you're sharing knowledge with the community here, you're just about to launch the series with speakers, but that's going to be accessible to everyone through online access. Everything's going to be streamed online, is that right? And open and available to everybody to be able to participate in some way.
Absolutely. We're trying to make this the brand or the signature of the Highland Institute, where we're bringing in wise people who have visions to share and actions to share, and inviting them to not just give their normal stuff, their normal shtick or predictions, but to speak very clearly to that. This will be available. Unfortunately, we can't do it live with a number of people. We'll have 5 keynote listeners. It'll be a very small group, but we will web stream this so listeners can get it online. It will also be recorded so they can look at it in the future. And our intent, once this is over, the talk, is that we can then take the content and move that forward to move policies and practices for a better post-pandemic world.
Now, we're familiar with the term keynote speakers. Keynote listeners is obviously related, but not quite the same thing. So give people a sense of what that looks like and who the folks are that you've invited and why.
This is a little technique that I learned in the United Nations General Assembly last September, when you had these young 17-year-old environmentalists, Greta Thunberg, addressing the General Assembly. They had the Secretary General, they had ambassadors invited as keynote listeners. So the voice was given to the young people, and the keynote listeners were there and then could comment and give a question. So these 5 people will be the small audience who will be invited once the talk is over to comment on the talk and ask a question. And that's another brand or signature of the Institute that we're trying to bring forward.
Give people a sense of who will be speaking and really the themes then that you're hoping will be explored.
Yeah, let me start with the second part of your question, the themes. We're looking at this work at 2 levels. We're looking at the level of the United States and reimagining liberty and justice for all. You know, when we did the Pledge of Allegiance growing up, that phrase, liberty and justice for all, is extremely important now. And under that, we're having things like deepening democracy, which is, you know, the theme on which we've invited Police Chief Harold. We have others dealing with health and education, inequalities. So that's the United States. We also have the Global Compact Among Nations, which has frayed dramatically during the pandemic. And our hope is that future pandemics can be addressed better. We're looking at leaders around the world who have dealt effectively with the pandemic. And very interestingly, the leaders that have succeeded the best are women. In New Zealand, in Germany, in Norway, and a handful of countries. And we want to dissect that and try and understand what were the ingredients for success. How can those be shared with future leaders? And if you look at other countries that have had the worst results, we're talking United States, Russia, Brazil, India, there have been male leaders. So is there a thread in there that we can learn from? So those are the themes that we're hoping to look at. In terms of speakers, we have a wish list of some really incredible people that I'm sure your listeners would know. We're starting locally with Police Chief Maris Harold talking about reforms in police departments, which she has done in her previous incarnation. We're looking at Congressman Joe Neguse on the 7th of October. And we also have a former Congresswoman from Rhode Island who we have invited, and she's agreed, and we're trying to set up a time now, Claudine Schneider. And so we have already our first three speakers, and we have a wish list for those down the road whose names I'm not going to mention, but they are really, I think, power-packed individuals who will be able to share their vision as well as the actions that they view are needed to get there.
That is Douglas Gardner with the Highland Institute. And as you said, the next speaker will be Claudine Schneider, five-term Congresswoman representing Rhode Island. That's next Monday, September 21st at 6 p.m. She's now a Boulder resident, so she's going to be speaking. The first speaker was new police chief of Boulder, Maris Harold, and upcoming in October will be Joan Neguse. And you can see past episodes and watch it live at highlandcityclub.com/institute. That's highlandcityclub.com/institute. Well, rock climbing is not known to be incredibly diverse. However, one young rock climber decided he wanted to do something about that. Professional climber Kai Leitner has launched a nonprofit, Climbing for Change, to readdress to racial inequality in rock climbing. He spoke with KGNU's Elena Claver.
Climbing for Change is my nonprofit organization, which works to connect corporate sponsors with DEI organizations and community leaders looking to create change in their areas. And I created it because I've been doing outreach work and DEI work, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion, for my entire career. I've worked at several different places, and when everything was going on with the Black Lives Matter movement, and I was talking with my different sponsors about their DEI plans and what they were doing to help with minority outreach, it seemed like the good intentions were there, but a lot of them didn't know how to create that long-term change that society was demanding from them. And from working with these organizations, I knew that a lot of them struggled with getting corporate sponsors or the funding and the resources they needed to create the impact that they wanted in their communities. And so I wanted to create something to help bridge those gaps, which is why I started Climbing for Change. And hopefully through this mission, I can help provide underserved communities with the resources and the support that they need to create programs that are sustainable and diversify our industry.
So what does that look like? What are some of the aspects of Climbing for Change? How do you do that?
Yes. So we want to be able to provide opportunities for individuals and community leaders, and also for diversity, equity, and inclusion organizations that already exist. And so that can come in the form of title sponsors that we use with in partnership with different organizations. That can also come with an application process where they can go in and submit a cause that they want funding for, and through review we can provide them with either money or a sponsor in the area that can help get that project started and basically just help them with the resources they need to get things up and running.
And what's been the response of individuals in the climbing community with whom you've worked, and also some of the industry, some of the companies, for example, that make climbing equipment, outdoor equipment?
It's been really great. Even I launched July 31st, and since then, my personal sponsors for my athletic career, like Adidas, like Clif Bar, like Evolve, have all been on board so far and have provided me with the funding. We've had different conversations with help. I recently met with the mayor of College Park here in Atlanta, and we're hoping to start a program here. And so everything's been going great. Right now, I'm in the fundraising stage of everything. And so we currently have our inaugural fundraising campaign on our website and on our social media pages. Both are climbing the number 4 change. And so if you guys want to be involved in the process, or anyone on the other end, or people listening to this, you can go to www.climbingthenumber4change.org and click on the donate button and donate.
Well, hopefully there'll be some response. This area is certainly a center for a lot of rock climbing. And so for you, as a young Black man coming into the climbing profession, I guess, not everybody does it professionally, but what was it like for you? How did you get into it?
I actually found this sport very unconventionally. I always climbed things I had no business climbing, from the baby gates my mom used to set around the house before I could walk. I would eat lunch in the basketball hoops when I was a toddler. And one day, when my mother was at her job and she took me with her, she was talking to her boss and was distracted. And I decided to climb the 50-foot flagpole that was standing behind her. And a lady walked by and saw me up there and got me down and wrote the address to the local climbing gym on a sticky note and gave it to my mom and said that I should try rock climbing. And the next day, my mother picked me up after school and brought me to the gym and begged the man at the front desk to get her ADHD kid into something productive. And the sport just clicked for me, because I had never entered an activity that could hold my attention for so long. But for some reason, when I was in a gym, I could sit there for hours and hours on end, and that could be the only thing that dominated my mind.
Oh, interesting. Well, and that sort of dovetails to something that I wanted to ask you about. It seems like climbing is often used for group strengthening, for group dynamics, for team building, for things like that. Does Climbing for Change involve working with young kids, not just to maybe climb rocks for themselves or to become good athletes, but for those kind of collective activities?
We hear... I feel like the mission of Climbing for Change in general is just providing opportunities and exposing people to different worlds and options. I feel like a lot of the times in minority communities, it can seem that our options are limited to basketball or football or just different areas that we're overrepresented in. And as a rock climber growing up, a lot of times when I would tell people the sport I was into, I would be looked at weird and teased and made fun of, because it just wasn't something that we were typically involved in. And so I want to be able to expose our community to different activities, to show them that we can do anything that we put our mind to, and that our calling could be in a multitude of different areas.
And have you reached out or had any contact with other groups that are doing similar things, such as I myself am a bird watcher, and there's a group of Black bird watchers that actually started a week for Black bird watchers to sort of, this isn't really a word, but de-invisibilize people, because people have been invisibilized.
Absolutely. We've been in contact with multiple different DEI organizations in the outdoor industry, because our goal is to partner with them, provide funding for them, and help them connect with the communities they affect, and even corporate businesses that are looking to diversify their sphere of influence or their company in general. And so that's a big part of what we do, is just connecting with people and seeing where we can create the most impact and change.
And finally, with the COVID happening, have you been able to get out and climb or work on this, I guess, remotely?
Yes, I am a huge just outdoor enthusiast, obviously. And so I've been getting out as much as possible. Maybe not so much with outdoor climbing, because in the area of the country that I'm in, it's really hot right now. But I just took a trip to HP 40 in Alabama, And I've been trying to get into the climbing gym as early as possible to keep up with social distancing practices. I've been definitely getting my fill in of climbing because it's been a little bit antsy in time. And also it's a lot more of a relaxed atmosphere because there's not another competition to train for. And I'm not so stressed out about a project. And so it's been really fun.
Well, Kai Leitner, thank you so much. Give us the website again, please.
Yes. The website is www.climbing4change.org.
And I would like to thank Chris Weidner from the Boulder Daily Camera for writing about you. And for KGNU, this is Elena.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
It is 8:29. You're listening to Community Radio KGNU. Warm temperatures around the Front Range again today. Highs getting close to 90 degrees, but hazy conditions as well. And tomorrow, in the mid-80s at least for the forecast high for Wednesday. A slight chance of some precipitation on Thursday. Thursday afternoon, we may see some thunderstorms. Just a slight chance though. But sunny skies for the coming days and highs at least in the mid-80s, but getting into the upper 80s, even close to 90 degrees today. Up next, it's the comment line.
Hi, my name is Will. I'm calling. I really enjoyed Joe Ritchie's Hemispheres program yesterday about Brazil. Thank you very much. All right.
Short and sweet. That's the comment line for this week. You can call it at 303-447-9911. Leave a message and we air the comment line on Tuesday mornings here at KGNU.